You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
August the 14th, and we've got two hockey guys on Overdrive today. Gord Miller, Dave Poulin here.
Although we have been baseball guys, we've been football guys. Yeah. We're going to be golf guys.
Well, we're going to play in a golf tournament on Friday. We're going to Perry Sound and play in Bobby Orr's tournament. Bobby's going to join us between 5:30 and 6. He's fishing today.
Also a deceptively good golfer.
Well, when you consider, like, he's just had surgery on his neck.
It might be better.
He had surgery on his shoulder last year. He does hit a great ball. He, like a lot of pro athletes, when he gets his hips into it.
Some pro athletes. That's not the way I play.
No, but you guys, when you're built like that, you got powerful builds. When you get your hips into it, when you transfer weight like that. I mean, the biggest thing in sports is weight transfer, right?
That's what it is. And I don't have it.
Dave, you played in the NHL for 14 years.
Well, I have weight transfer in hockey. I don't have it in golf.
No? No. What's your handicap?
It is 10 right now.
So if you're legit 10... You're in the top 5%
of golfers. My index is 8.1.
Right, so you're in the top 5% of golfers.
So that's legit.
Like, if you play by the rules in golf, the vast majority of people will never break 90.
I play by every single
rule. I know you do. And so I think you don't give yourself enough credit, is what I'm saying. So Bobby's going to join us. He's fishing today.
Weight transfer and fishing as well, or not?
No,
so
and
much?
Here's a question for you, and I say this nicely. I always kind of laugh when people say fishing is a sport. Like, how could it be a sport if one team doesn't know they're playing?
Oh, they know they're playing.
No, they don't.
The first fish I ever caught, I played against a guy who was a really good player. Let me tell you something.
I just don't... Like, you like to fish. You're a fisherman.
Absolutely not.
No, Born but you, every story you tell me, you're fishing with Bobby Clark, or you're fishing here, you're
no,
fishing
no, no.
there.
I was born in Timmins.
Yes.
Never fished up there.
Okay.
People fly in to fish. Never fish. Because my dad didn't fish. Didn't fish or hunt. The first fish I caught was off the Jersey Shore, was 125-pound mako. Almost 7 feet long. That guy knew he was playing in a game. That was 2 hours. That guy, that was a game.
He's got a brain the size of a baseball.
Doesn't matter. He knew he was playing. He knew he was playing,
I'm not a big fisherman, but I went. My hometown is Sundre, Alberta, and lots of great ice fishing around there. So we went out one day, my buddies and I, decided to go ice fishing. Nothing. We froze to death. At the end of the day, an otter...
That's something I would never do.
At the end of the day, an otter poked his head out from the hole.
Wow.
And suddenly we realized why there was no fish, because the otter was eating them all. But I did go deep sea fishing in the Bahamas a couple of years ago, and there was a guy, and he got a yellowfin tuna, which is, you know...
Like 600 pounds or something ridiculous?
Not that big, but he's kind of taking his time. Make sure you get pictures of it. And the guy running the boat says, hurry up. And the guy's, letting it go, reeling it in. And all of a sudden he pulls, and the head of the fish flies into the boat, because a shark came up and just
ate the rest of it.
And the guy running the boat said, that would have been a nice fish if you hurried.
The shark we brought in was amazing, but literally 2 hours coming.
Yeah, so Bobby's gone fishing today, and then we'll have to get him to tell the story. But one of my favorites and I've been going to his golf tournament now like 14, 15 years, I emcee it. With Jimmy Ralph, which is always a lot of fun.
It's a pretty good crowd.
The best thing about it...
Pretty good crowd.
The best thing about it is making fun of Bobby Orr in Perry Sound.
Now you're allowed to because they know you're allowed to. But...
In the first couple of years...
so revered.
But Bobby...
And everyone would look at you like...
Oh, it's like going to the Vatican doing? And making fun of the Pope. And so...
You know who likes it the most?
Him.
Bobby Orr.
Bobby loves it. He laughs. But he just wants to be one. The biggest thing about him is he just wants to be one of the guys.
He is one of the guys.
So two of my favorite stories from Moore's golf tournament. We stay at a hotel there, which if there's nine hotels in Perry Sound, this one is ranked 10th. We used to stay downtown. I forget what it's called.
We're at the JW this time.
Are you at the JW?
Yes.
There is no JW up there. But we stayed at this hotel downtown. I think it was called the Empire or something like that. And I was checking out, and I looked behind the guy checking me out. I said, is the kitchen on fire? And he goes, yeah, I guess it is. So then that hotel burned down, and we
have a new hotel.
So we sit out back on Thursday night, and you're part of this. We always have a group of guys, so we bring wine and cigars.
Well, you bring your chair out from the parking lot, from your room to the parking lot.
So it's got those... At home, if you can picture those sort of 1 meter by 1 meter cement pad, things. Like, they're about an inch thick that people used to use for patios. So that's sort of the back lot. So you go out there, and we smoke cigars and drink wine. And
pretty good group of guys out there.
Great group of guys. So the one year, this guy, so that's where the oversized cars park. So this guy from Saskatchewan pulls up, and I'm walking out with like four bottles of wine and an opener. And the guy says, are you the dude from TSN? And I said, yeah. He goes, is that Bobby Orr? I said, yeah. Is that Peter Mansbridge? And Frank and Peter Mahovlich? I said, yeah. He goes, what's going on here? Like, he was so shocked. But we were there, was it 2 years ago when the guy pulled up and
yes.
and asked?
Well, first of all, you've just gone by the sign that says, welcome to Parry Sound, home of Bobby Orr, the big sign.
Yeah, so the guy pulls up. He's from, I want to say, Pennsylvania. I think that was his plate was. And he said, hey, do you guys know where the Bobby Orr Memorial Arena is? And Bobby pipes up with, he's not dead yet. And the guy says, oh, really? Does he ever come back here? And Bobby's like, yeah, once in a while.
And he hangs out in a parking lot right off the highway.
Yeah, drinking wine of a paper cup. And he says, has he ever come back here? And Bobby's like, yeah, once in a while. What's he like? Oh, good guy, quiet, stays to himself. Now, can you imagine this guy the next day? Right. He goes to the Bobby Orr Hall of Fame. And then I was talking to him last night.
Realizes what went on.
Yeah.
It is a great tournament, and it's for the center up there, which is...
Yeah, it's the Shockey Center, I think it's called. Shockey or Stocky?
Tremendous. Art center up there. And well, beautiful.
They get great musical acts up there. I got to find out what the name of it is.
Beautiful.
I think it's the Stocky Center. I should know.
I'm going with Stocky. You introduce it every time you speak at it.
I know.
You're like a big deal up there.
Not really. The Stocky Center. It's not Shockey. It's Stocky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll be there Friday for the tournament. I've been... Now, you play with the same guys every year, right?
No.
Don't you?
No, I rotate through different guys. Yeah, I've played with the Boston group. I've played with a bunch of different guys.
So some of the guys that own the Red Sox
yeah,
come up.
I've played with Phil Morris and that group and his brother, and it's a good group of guys. It's
so
a tremendous group.
Yeah, and so that's on Friday, and then it'll be fun. I got requested by a group this year.
Of course you did.
I can't imagine. I'm so bad.
They haven't seen you play.
I'm so bad.
They haven't seen you play. They want entertainment.
I last played golf in the last week of May. It's the last
One of two things is going to happen. There's either rust on your game, or you'll have no bad habits and you'll be great.
Could
be the case.
Great is no longer my repertoire. I'm kind of retired from golf.
Too time consuming?
Time consuming. I don't get back from the World Championship till the end of May. And once I've been away that long, between the playoffs and the World Championship, I just...
Put your feet up?
Yeah. And everyone else has been playing for 2 months. I hate holding people up. We're going to talk to Bob Weeks on the show today about slow play. I hate holding people up on the golf course.
If you play fast, anyone will play with you.
Yeah.
If you play fast, like I play fast, and you just invite anyone to play. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But a slow player, and if you're at a club, and you know we have a morning group, and it's 25-ish guys.
Yeah.
There's a couple guys.
You're at Weston, right?
Yeah, there's a couple guys that are a little slow. But it's an interesting challenge when they are slow, because this group, the PGA that's being targeted, are mostly the young guys.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about it, right?
No, it's the young guys. Yeah. It's their sports psychologists, their mental coach, their therapist. All those different things are factoring in before every shot. And it's really interesting. I talked to one of the starters for the Canadian Open, because J.B. Holmes has been a real target of it.
Right. Glenn all day.
And he said at the Canadian Open... He came to the first tee like 15 seconds before his tee time. Didn't have his glove on, hadn't marked his ball, hadn't... So this isn't just what he does to Brooks Koepka.
Right.
This is the way of
life. So the issue in golf is that... And this is what happened when Tiger Woods and Phil were in their absolute prime. They were two of the fastest players on tour. So here's two of the best players are the fastest. It drove them nuts. Slow play drove them...
And Bryson DeChambeau has brought it to a whole different level.
Well, I will argue he has not. Bernard, can
so
you
will
take,
he.
Bernard, can you take any longer?
Yes.
Bernard Langer, honestly, was the human rain delay. Like, I've never seen anything like it.
Right.
He was, I saw him at the Masters the year he won it, one of the years he won it, and he was just glacial.
But in fairness to DeChambeau, because he does everything so differently, it magnifies the time. Because, you know... From club length to everything that he does is different from the conventional golfer.
Right.
And so then everybody's on edge a little bit when they start with him, and then when he takes 2 minutes and 6 seconds to read an 8-foot putt.
But this is an issue not just in golf. This is what people talk about with the NBA, where the last 3 minutes take 20 with all the timeouts. This is an issue.
Baseball.
I was watching the Jays today for a while. Like, how many times do guys step out now? Like, I should have kept track.
So what do you do? Do you put a pitch timer on it?
No, I don't think you can step out. Once you step into the batter's box,
you're in.
You're in. You can't leave. Like, you can't, you know, what other sport can you do that? I'm not ready.
It's a good point.
I'm not ready.
The goalie, when you're coming down
boxing,
on him on
boxing.
A shootout.
Hang on, I'm not ready.
Yeah. After you've started your move on a shootout,
Goalie step out. Hang on. Sorry, my glove's not on right. Like, you can't do that. So I do think it's a big issue in a lot, like the NFL, right? Like, NFL games go on three and a half hours.
College
football is really long. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the American League, you know, American League games are longer because in the National League, pitching changes happen more often between innings.
Right.
You lift the pitcher for a hitter, and so the game does tend to go faster. But remember, a few years ago, the Yankees and Red Sox, when they were going toe-to-toe in the playoffs every year, those were 3.5, 4-hour games.
That weren't starting till late on the East Coast.
And Keith, our producer, like, those were 9-inning games that were 3.5, 4 hours long, right? Like, those weren't...
Yeah, they were ending at midnight, and they were East Coast games.
Those were 8 o'clock starts that were winding up at midnight. Like, I think it's a big issue.
It's a problem in golf. There's no question about it. Now, we have 4-hour and 10-minute rule at Westin. 4:12, I think it is. 4:12. So they want everything done in 4:12.
So what if you're not?
You actually filled out a little piece of paper, and they mark your time out, and you'll get a little letter that says speed up.
So they used to... Now, one of the things that happens in golf, and this is unfortunate because I think, you know, if you're a good player, it's unfortunate because a lot of courses that are open to the public shave the rough down because they don't want it. That encourages faster play. Like, because if the rough's really long, it's hard to find a ball. It's hard to hit it out of there. But if you're, you know, if you're playing a match, if you're a member and you're playing a match and you're really good, you know, and your opponent hits the ball in the rough and gets, you know, basically a fluffy lie and gets to hit it out.
Right.
You'd like the greens to be fast. And I know at Westin where you play, the greens are very fast.
Lightning.
Right.
Lightning.
So at Scarborough, where I play a lot, or used to play a lot.
Same thing.
The greens are super fast, but it only promotes fast play if you're good.
Well, if you're putting everything out, that's even slower. Now, the pins staying in have helped.
Someone said that.
They've helped. It has helped for sure.
Like, but I do think that the pace of play, not just in golf, but in all sports, is an issue. One of the reasons I think the NBA is so appealing, 2.5-hour games.
Well, think about face-offs. They came back from the Olympics one year and said, okay, we've got to be better at this because in international hockey, they were dropping the puck within seconds of
the fast faceoff,
and that has improved dramatically.
And the other thing they've done, and there's a real subtle rule change in hockey that hasn't been talked about enough. They no longer toss the center out of the faceoff; he gets a warning.
Mm-hmm.
So after an icing, when you can't call a timeout, what would teams do? Throw a winger in. He'd get tossed out. By the time you got the center in there, you buy yourself an extra 10 seconds.
Be fresh.
Now, just a warning. And you get a second warning; it's a penalty, which I think is great.
Yeah.
But in the era of, you know, hey, listen, I mean, in the era of TikTok, which I don't know if you're aware. I mean, your kids are older, but I got a 14-year-old daughter. Like, TikTok is like 10-second snippets of video. I mean, that's the world we're living in.
Well, it's the Twitter world. It's
short attention
else.
Spans. I just think sports has got to be quicker. So I want to ask Keith, our producer, because he's a baseball guy. I watch a little bit, but he's a baseball guy. How can you fix the length of games in baseball?
Honestly, it's a fantastic question, Gord. No, I just think, I mean, the pitch clock obviously helps, you know, limiting mound visits. I do think that stepping out of the box and having that as kind of a strategy, that's something that needs to change. And, you know, pitchers messing with hitters, hitters messing with pitchers. I do think that's a big problem for the game. But at the end of the day, when it's at least a 9-inning game and you have 27 outs you need to get through, I don't think there's much you can do. I think that you can shorten it bit by bit, but I think at the end of the day, you're still looking at, you know, the average game is always going to be about 3 hours long, and right. I don't think you can do much about that.
3 hours is okay. It's when it drags into, you know, 3.5, you know, when the games matter, when the games start, you know, the late, you know, the pennant drive and the postseason, when they get that long.
Well, then you've got unlimited pitching. You're trying to win that game. If you use 9 pitchers, you use 9 pitchers. It doesn't matter. You'll be as slow as you want to be.
But in, you know, in a hockey game, you get 60 minutes of action.
Mm-hmm.
In a basketball game, you get 48 minutes of action. In a National Football League game, I think it's about 12.5.
Oh, I think it's less than that.
Is it? I thought last I saw it was like 12 and a half.
I thought it was six to seven minutes of
actual play you get.
I think you're closer to six or seven.
Yeah, and baseball.
Actual running time.
Yeah. So, by the way, I think the Jays, the final score is just in now. They lost today, right?
Yeah, they were coming back. They were. I think they got it to 5-3 at one point, and then Texas came back and got another couple.
Where are we here?
Another series win, and then since you went away, the Jays are...
11 minutes for football, Keith says. Okay. Where's the Jays score? It was 7-3 at one point. You got it, Keith? Where's the Jays score? Sorry, 7-3 is final? There you go. But they take the series. Bo Bichette with another double.
Yeah, you missed some excitement when you were gone.
In Europe?
With the Jays.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you really did. It, you know, the Bichette coming up. And
yeah. He's got 16 extra base hits in 16 games, right? Extends his major league record. Am I right on that?
Flair.
Was it 15 and 15 before? I think it was 15 and 15 before. I think he's got 16 extra base hits.
Yeah, with real flair, too, yeah. Not just doing it.
So, yeah, I mean, now we're going to talk to Craig Button at 4:30 because Craig and I were overseas, and he's been kind of doing a couple things. One is sort of to-do lists for Canadian NHL teams and how they're doing, and also kind of looking ahead to the draft. And you've done this a lot. You know, you were part of management for a while, and I got to tell you, I've been around a long time. This draft might be the best draft for Canadian players.
Wow.
Since 2003.
Wow. And I've got some questions for both of you guys
That's Fleury. That's Marc-Andre Fleury. That's Eric Staal. That's right. Corey Perry. Ryan Getzlaff.
Yeah.
Mike Richards. Jeff Carter.
And considered one of the great drafts of all time.
Right. And you know why? And here's the thing that it gets missed. And this is one of the, I hate seeing young players get rushed.
I know exactly where you're going.
So why is the class of 2003 so good? Because the lockout
at 2004,
in 2005, the lost season in 2004-05. So Eric Staal is a late birthday. He gets drafted in 2003. Plays for Carolina as an 18/19-year-old. Has an awful year. The next year plays in Lowell in the American League. They shared the team with Calgary. Has a dynamite year, comes back. He's lights out. Carolina wins the cup. All those guys from the 2003 draft went back to junior, went back to college, played in the American League. Like, it's the best laboratory experiment we have to show you why it's important not to rush players. It's the greatest.
Well, you and I had the Kotkaniemi conversation several times early in the year.
I get roughed up in Montreal about that all the time.
Yeah.
But my feeling,
I still think there's exceptions, Gord. Overall, as a rule,
of course,
I agree with you.
Of course,
there's always going to
but
be.
But if you were a dominant player in your draft year, like if you dominated junior hockey, by all means,
mm-hmm.
Sidney Crosby dominated, absolutely. Auston Matthews dominated in Switzerland, absolutely.
The unconventional route and dominated.
Yeah, but I got no problem with that. But Kotkaniemi scored 9 goals
mm-hmm.
in Finland the year before. I mean, so he had an okay year.
He had a good year. He had a good year.
If he was 22 years old and had that year, you wouldn't say that.
Well, I think you're going to project out to what he does when he's 22 years old.
It's going to be because of this year. And I hope he does. But what I'm saying is, how many guys have we seen play too soon?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you guys here in Toronto. Luke Shen should never have played as an 18-year-old. Mm-hmm. That should never have happened. All he did was get the puck and get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been back in Saskatoon.
Yeah, well, I didn't play my first NHL game until I was 23. So.
Right. Right? So, I mean...
On my way.
Right. So, I'm not saying that no one should play as an 18-year-old. But what I say is, you know, send the guy back to junior, send him to the American League, let him go back to college, bring him up when they're 20, then you got him to 28.
Mm-hmm.
They're yours till they're 28. Mm-hmm. You're not facing unrestricted free agency at 25.
Yeah, and you're seeing the young kids, Turcotte, some of the high draft picks are all geared to go to college, at least for the year.
Yeah, Cole Caulfield's going to play at Wisconsin.
Exactly.
So
Turcotte's at Wisconsin.
So... That 2003 draft class, that which was dominated. I mean, there were lots of great American players. Zach Parise's in that draft. Ryan Suter's in that draft.
Yeah, one question I want to ask Craig about is the lack of Americans at the very top.
It's weird.
This year's.
So this past year, the 02 draft, or sorry, not the 02 draft, the draft of 01s, which was the 2019 draft,
mm-hmm.
was 7 of the top 15 were Americans.
Yeah. And elite.
We could see 7 of the top 10.
Wow.
Be from Canada this year.
That's why I love this tournament. It's the introduction of these players.
So the Hlinka Gretzky Cup.
Are introducing these players.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, that Yaroslav Askarov, the goaltender for Russia, is
unbelievable. And that's a whole other topic.
We'll talk about that. So Craig Button's going to join us. Bobby Orr is going to join us.
Good player.
Brian Hayes is going to call in.
He's our baseball analyst now, isn't he?
What's like? Did something happen? Is it the Adam Ernie trade? He wants to, Tampa traded Adam Ernie to Detroit for a fourth round pick. Is that what Hayes wants to sound off on? Like he normally only calls in when he, like.
No, here's the deal. He was going to the game today, and we had a lengthy conversation last week. He's taking his 4-year-old daughter.
Right.
And I encouraged him to be glove guy.
But wasn't he behind the mesh?
Well, he was, but I still don't trust him on a fly ball over the top of the mesh. Anyway, he didn't know where he was sitting at the time.
Okay.
And he questioned whether a radio personality, a well-known radio personality, could dare to bring a glove to the game. And I said, one of the Boston Bruins used to bring one to the game because I used to bring one when I had my twins at the game. I wore my glove.
Did you?
Well, because I sat right on the first baseline just past the dugout in the first row.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess...
Well, so it's just protection. That's why I was bringing my glove. And obviously, my twins paid no attention to what was going on.
Can I tell you my favorite story about Fenway? I'm there the year of the strike happened, 94. So Seattle's playing, and I go to see Ken Griffey Jr. play. And a Red Sox hits a check swing foul ball. You know those check swing like screamers?
That's the worst kind.
Right, so just a
going
check
the
swing,
other way.
Goes flying, and hits the guy in the concourse right in the head. Knocks his glasses flying. He's got four beers on a tray. Boom, they go, the whole bit. Guy gets up. It's Paul Stewart, the referee.
Oh, that's great.
And this guy yells, "Hey, Stewie, is the ball dented?"
One of the legendary NHL players who became a referee.
Yeah, got hit right in the head with a foul ball and some leather lung at Fenway.
That's great.
Just gave it to him. So, yeah, so Bobby Orr is going to talk to us. Always love talking to him. He's got pretty strong opinions about the game. And one of his strongest opinions is kids shouldn't play in the summer.
Well, a number of the best players of all time feel the exact same way.
And I'm not talking about like prospect camps.
No, no, no.
He's talking about like, bantam age, peewee age, atom age kids should not play in the summer.
As a child, I never played in the summer, but most didn't. But I went to one hockey camp for 1 week in my entire life. And that was a local camp. It was the Mike Pelleck Skating School, which was a little bit of an oxymoron because I play golf with Michael now.
Mike was not a... Like the Dave Keon Skating School,
no,
I could see.
No, it was the Mike Pelleck Skating School at Lambton Arena.
Okay.
And so Mike did put me in the NHL. Give him a little credit there.
Absolutely.
But I am real big on that, and I didn't skate at all in the summer when I played in the NHL. Until about 10 days before camp.
All right, so assuming he gets off the water with some fish in time, Bobby Orr will join us after 5:30. So that's all coming up on Overdrive on TSN 1050 on the app and watching on TSN 4. Gord Miller with David Poulin from Timmins, Ontario. North Porcupine or South Porcupine?
South Porcupine would be a suburb and where Donnie Lever's from. And
yeah. We'll
see Frank and Peter Mihalovich, who are from another suburb, Shoemaker. They're not from Timmins.
So, I'm sorry, what's the population of Timmins?
43,000.
And how many suburbs are there?
Oh, there's multiple suburbs.
You make it, like, I'm sorry, but you're making it sound like...
It's a big city.
Not really.
It is a big city. McIntyre Arena, McIntyre Mines is in Shoemaker, so I actually played my hockey in the suburbs.
I love Timmins, by the way, but don't get me wrong. But I just
great
just,
town.
It is a great town.
Did you do like the U16s up there 1 year?
No, we played actually up there years ago, the 25, almost 30 years ago now, that TSN had a hockey team. We had some good players, and we went up because I think the community center in South Porcupine burned down. There was like something happened like that. So they were fundraising to build something new. So we went up and we played the firefighters and police in a game up there. And
that'd be a rugged crew, I would imagine.
And they basically ran us out of the rink.
Yeah, that would be a rugged crew.
In the second intermission, some of our guys went over and said, "Hey, like, can you, if you don't cool it, we're going to leave." And like, if you don't like it rough, go back home.
That's great.
Yeah, so love it there. But I'm just like, it's like Kelvin. It's like when you talk to Wendell Clark about Kelvington, right? So Darren Detish is from Porcupine Plain,
which is a suburb of Kelvington, is it not?
Kelvington's 500 people. You can't have a suburb.
Timmins does have suburbs.
No, it doesn't.
It does.
It does. You can't.
Ask Frank and Peter where they're from. They'll say they're from suburbs, from Timmins.
Well, just because you say it doesn't make it true.
Well, it does. Mass transit.
Mass transit?
Sure. Out to the suburbs. You can take the bus out to Shoemaker or Porcupine.
When's the last time you were back in Timmins?
2 years ago.
And the thing, the amazing thing about Timmins is lots of people speak French there.
It's very French.
Very French town. Why is that?
Once you get up north like that,
yeah.
I mean, you think about coming across.
You've
got Rouyn-Noranda on a parallel.
Right.
Davy Keon's hometown. Dale Talon is from
there. Is Andrew Brunette from Timmins? No, he's just, he's Sudbury, right? I
think. He's Sudbury.
Yeah. There's a famous story about Joe Juno.
Sudbury would be where we would go on spring break.
Oh, it's way south. Like when when you went south.
Or the Sioux or Thunder Bay.
Yeah. We went south for spring break. That's where we drove
from Timmins, yeah. Santa Claus used to come up to our place.
Still to come, we're going to give away a McDonald's gift card today. $100 gift card. We've been asking trivia questions this week. I'm going to come up with a trivia question.
About Timmins.
Might have to do with hometowns of NHL players, but we might do that. Might do that. Last week, I had the good fortune to be in Slovakia and the Czech Republic with our guest, Craig Button, our TSN resident scout and GM. And Craig joins us from Calgary, I believe. Craig, how are you?
I am from Calgary, Gord. I'm very good. And how are you doing? Have you been waking up early in the morning, or have you been getting your regular amount of sleep?
I'm okay. I'm actually, I slept on the flight all the way home, so I'm okay. For some reason, coming back from Europe, I'm fine.
Craig, he zipped through time zones in North America like they're nothing. So that couple extra hours coming back from Bratislava is no big deal for Gord.
So I want to talk about a couple things. Go ahead, Craig. Yeah.
I'm just happy that I don't have to follow Bobby Orr on Overdrive.
Well, I'm
you're opening up the game.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in the first shift.
You're the warm-up act. So we want to talk to you about a couple of things. We're going to get to the Hlinka Gretzky Cup and the unbelievable Canadian draft class for the 2020 draft. But first of all, you did a thing on, I think it was mid-July, about sort of the priorities for the seven Canadian teams. Right. This is July 29th. So here is for the Leafs. Number one, Mitch Marner / cap space. Number two, top three right defenseman. Three, backup goalie. Four, fourth line center. And then five, forward depth. Now, I would say to you that three, four, and five have kind of been done, right? Backup goalie's done. Fourth line center's done. Forward depth is done. Is it not?
Yeah. I would. And you know, going to the center, and I said this, I think that, you know, having Jason Spezza, you know, a very different type of center. He can be an offensive specialist. You know, you and I have talked about Mike Babcock and, you know, why he likes Frédéric Gauthier. But it gives Mike a lot of flexibility in how he wants to round out his lineup on any given night, depending on the opponent. So I think that center ice position, the depth, I mean, they're counting on Korshtof, they're counting on Mikheyev to come in. You know, that'll be music to Mike's ears, too, because they're bigger players. And, you know, if Michael Neuvirth can find the form that allowed him to be a really solid backup goaltender, I think that the Toronto Maple Leafs are in great shape in those three areas.
Is it safe to say that it's really an incomplete summer, though, because without being able to get Marner signed, could they do exactly what they wanted to do? It's hard to say exactly what they would have wanted to do with the lineup, but like a lot of teams, they're hamstrung by the key guys not being signed, and so then they don't quite know what flexibility they might or might not have.
I think they do, Dave. I think that was why when we talked about priority number one being signed Mitch Marner / cap space, they go hand in hand. They needed to create cap space so that they didn't have terms dictated to them. Now, you know, you don't want to have to just go and trade players because you don't have the cap space. You know, by moving dollars out and, you know, making some decisions in that regard, I think that they've been able to have a greater grip on the steering wheel of the Mitch Marner contract. So I think that was essential for them to do. And I think that if you look at their lineup, I mean, they switched out Zaitsev for Cody Ceci. I think Gord, too, just quickly, but I think they got number two. They've never had a defenseman like Tyson Barry on the right side in their lineup. And so I think they got number two solved as well. So when you start to look, you know, last year they bring Korshkos over, they sign Mikheyev. You know, they make a move to bring Kerfoot. They try to make their team look a little bit different with Spezza. But I think, Dave, that like now, and as we've seen right through the league with this class of restricted free agents coming out of their entry-level contracts, you know, nobody's signing. I mean, they had Matthews is signed, and we saw the Aho offer sheet and Timo Meier. But they're all sitting on the sidelines right now. And I think that every team is hopeful that they can get those players signed sooner rather than later. But, you know, this is one of the, I think this is one of the real significant challenges right now for NHL teams and the NHL. Significant players coming out of entry-level contract that ostensibly have no leverage per the CBA, but have leverage because of how important they are to their team. So, I mean, that's something that they have to go forward with. But I think that the Toronto Maple Leafs group, the management group led by Cal Dubas, has done a really good job in terms of, you know, making adjustments and changes to their lineup, given that they had some cap complications.
Well, Craig, you know, the one thing is that you get the sense talking to agents, there was a number of them over at Seas that we were with, they get the feeling everyone's waiting on Marner. Like Matthew Tkachuk in Calgary, you know, Lion A in Winnipeg, Kyle Connor in Winnipeg, Rantanen in Colorado, Point in Tampa, that all these guys are waiting to see what happens. Brock Besser in Vancouver, they're waiting to see what happens with Marner.
Well, and it's interesting to me, Gord, because I think we have yardsticks up. The Matthews 5-year deal at 11.6. The Timo Meier 4-year deal that he chose to sign with the big qualifying offer coming out of year 4. That Sebastian Aho 5-year deal offer sheet. So, what I would ask is, are the agents waiting on the on Marner, or is everybody waiting on the Toronto Maple Leafs? Because
right.
To me, it's the Toronto Maple Leafs that, you know, are moving along, and, you know, is Mitch Marner saying it's $11 million or nothing? Well, as Bob Goodnow has said often, when he was the head of the Players Association, a rising tide raises all boats.
Right.
And that may be the case as much as anything. So, you know, I think there's a lot of focus in on the Toronto Maple Leafs and Mitch Marner because they go hand in hand. But at the same time, you know, I think talking to people around the league, you know, they all know how important these players are to their teams. And here we sit on August 5th, 14th. And it'll be interesting, you know, what happens here in the next 3 weeks.
Craig, how would you break this logjam with a rule change? Would it be arbitration eligibility right out of your entry-level deal if you were, and would you want that as a player and or as management?
Here's what I would say, Dave. I think that that's where you'd have to explore, because what's happened is, you know, as the league has gotten younger and, you know, these players have not just come into the league and performed, they performed at the upper echelon of players in the league. So I think that this has been, you know, we see now in a CBA, you know, there becomes a situation where the CBA doesn't reflect the reality of the marketplace. And the reality of the marketplace is these young players are significant players to their teams. And that's why I say they have leverage, because with the parity in the league, you know, you go without your key players, that can impact you in terms of not only making the playoffs, but where you finish in the regular season in terms of seeding. So I think that's become significant. So, you know, if you look at an arbitration system, maybe it's not full arbitration. Maybe it's players that are in that 2-year window that have signed coming out of entry level, and you use a very specified group of players as comparables. Maybe you use it based on games played, but I think that would be the area that I would suggest and follow up your point that could break this logjam and reflect what's currently happening in the marketplace around the league.
So, Craig, let's switch gears a little bit. You and I were in the Czech Republic and Slovakia last week for the Ivan Hlinka Wayne Gretzky Cup, the under-18 summer tournament. You go to that every year, and it's my second. But I did the draft for over 24 years at TSN. The greatest draft, I think, in the modern era is the 03 draft. I mean that is, I don't know how you can possibly compare to, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury, Eric Staal, Vanek, Suter, Phaneuf, Carter, Seabrook, Parisi, Getzlaff, Brent Burns, Ryan Kesler, Mike Richards. I mean, that first round, Corey Perry, just goes on and on. But last year was an American year for the draft. 7 of the top 15 players were American-born players. Conceivable, based on what we saw, that 7 of the top 10 in 2020 could be Canadians.
Yeah, I don't think it's just, I don't think it's not only conceivable, Gord. I think it's a real possibility. And, you know, you start to look at the top five. I mean, you look at Alexi Lafreniere, you look at Quentin Byfield, Cole Perfetti, Hendricks Lapierre, Justin Barron is in that group. I mean, it's an unbelievable group of young players from Canada in the draft. And much as we talked about last year, the U.S., they had seven of the top 15 picks. I mean, seven of the top 10 very well could come right from Canada. And not just the number of players, the quality of player is very, very, very high. So, you know, when you start to consider, you know, and we talk about these things being cyclical, people say, the Canadians, the draft is down. Well, yeah, last year, because it was a special group of U.S. players. Well, this year could be a special group of American players. Right. And I will just add one other thing, too, back to that 03 draft. Shea Weber and Patrice Bergeron and Corey Crawford were second-round
picks. It's incredible. And we talked about the fact that, you know, the lab experiment, the lockout in 04-05 forced those guys to stay in junior or play in the American League or stay in college, and it made such a difference. Yaroslav Askarov, the Russian goaltender.
Yeah, despite the great Canadian team over there, they didn't win because of
Askarov. Marc-Andre Fleury went first in 2003. The last goaltender to go first overall in the draft. Could Askarov go that high?
I think he has to be a consideration, just because he's that good. And, you know, you think back to 2005 and when Carey Price went fifth overall, and, you know, and we've seen his career and how good it's been, how awesome it has been. And when we look back at that draft and you say, okay, Sidney Crosby went first overall. There's no quibbling about that. He's one of the best players that's ever played in the NHL. But Kopitar went 11 and Carey Price went fifth. And, you know, I mean, Kopitar has two Stanley Cups. He's been a top-end player. Carey Price has won an MVP. So if you look at Carey Price going five, and even at that time, Gord, there was some, you know, consternation amongst fans of the Canadians about, you know, why are you drafting Carey Price? But when I watch Askarov play, he's the best goalie I've seen entering the draft since Carey Price. So if he's that good and he can have that impact on a team, and let's just say he can be at the same level or near a level of where Carey Price is at, well, we're talking about top three player from the 2005 draft. He has to be a consideration at the top end of the draft. Absolutely has to be. And, you know, everybody's different in terms of what their development path is and the timing of it. But watching Askarov, not only the skill and the technique, but I think he's closer to playing than not in the NHL. I don't think he's like Ilya Samsonov, who I think is a terrific goaltender. It'll be 5 years at the end of this season since he was drafted. I don't think Askarov is off the mark in terms of being close to playing the NHL. Maybe just like Andrei Vasilevsky.
Wow. I'm so excited about watching these guys this year, and I think we'll see a number of the World Junior Tournament. It's going to be fabulous. Craig, it was great to be over there with you. It was fun to, you know, be your driver, and I look forward to doing it again.
You know what, Gord, it is. It was really enjoyable. I mean, the time we spend, the group, it was great with Kevin Pratt and obviously Paul Graham over there. And, you know, it was, you know, to watch these young players in that environment and then to track them, it is a lot of fun. And Gord, we are going to see a lot of these players at the World Junior Tournament, which just makes it even that much more exciting.
Awesome. Craig, thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, thanks.
That's Craig Button, our resident scout and general manager.
It was always my favorite part of the summer. I mean, I went 5 years in a row when I was in management, and you just got an introduction to the players, and there was a certain freshness and purity to them because they hadn't been introduced to the world yet in many aspects. And, you know, a lot of guys were seeing these guys play at that high level. Yes, the U-17s, but all together in the same place for the first time.
Still to come, Sound Wars coming up at 5 o'clock. We're going to give away our McDonald's $100 gift card. We got a great question for you today. Really good question for you today. We've been talking about Ontario, players from Ontario. It's kind of in that theme, if you want to try to study up on it. That's all coming up on Overdrive, TSN 1050 on the app and watching on TSN 4.
This is TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
They did it, Taylor!
All right, here we go. Round two in the Rancor bracket, the Rennie Rancor bracket. Your buddy, Rennie Rancor.
Wedding singer. Wedding singer. That's what you think about when you think about Rennie Rancor.
No, I think about the guy who was an obnoxious showboat who I couldn't stand, to be honest. I honestly, no one paid money to watch him sing the song.
Not what he thought.
The fist pumping, honestly. I know.
You like the new guy?
The big opera guy?
He's like a waiter.
Opera man?
He works a suite.
No.
He works a suite. They had auditions.
He's a bartender? Is it serious?
He's a bartender in the building in a suite. And they had auditions, and he won. So he literally gets up and preps his bar, and then he goes down and sings the national anthem, and then goes back to work for the rest of the game.
How good is that?
That's great.
I like that. Okay, here we go. So it's round two, seed two versus seed six. Seed two is Mary Jerry. There are a few exhibit the giving mood more than Jerry, so it's no surprise when Santa dropped off this special gift under our trees this past winter.
Here comes Jerry Claus, here comes Jerry Claus, right down Jerry Claus Lane. Have yourself a Jerry little Christmas. Deck the halls with boughs of Jerry. Fa-la-la-la-la. Enough of this sh-
Oh, dear. So this is our sixth seed, Hungry Like Landsberg. While filling in for Carlo, Matthew Caws is inspired by Michael Landsberg's wild eating habits and the tones of Duran Duran to belt out this beauty.
In honor of Michael and his eating habits, Hungry Like a Landsberg. Is that a fruit cup? Darren Drager's giving me nothing at all. I'm going to eat more food. I know it's real rude. And I'm hungry like Landsberg.
I can guarantee you.
That's painful.
I will never sing on the air.
That is painful.
I'm the only person of Irish descent who cannot sing.
Well, I hope Caws isn't of Irish descent, because that would be two of you.
No, he's a big, I think he's, Matthew, well, Matthew's a wine guy. He knows wine like the back of his hand.
It doesn't make him able to sing.
True. Up to you now to vote for your favorite. Go to tsn1050.ca and decide which clip is moving on. Mary Jerry or Hungry Like Landsberg. We'll have the results tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., I believe, on First Up.
Mary Jerry's going to be tough to beat.
Jerry is a legend.
Become a legend.
Jerry is a legend. We, by the way, yesterday, you know, if you heard, but an NBA player, an NBA draft pick, inadvertently tweeted out Adam Silver's cell number.
Oh, nice.
And so we were saying, if you could text a commissioner one question, what would it be?
Well, Adam Silver has done a magnificent job as commissioner of the NBA. Yes. So he would probably get less challenging questions than some of the other commissioners were.
So when we come back at 5 o'clock, we are going to give away a McDonald's $100 gift card. We're going to ask you a very difficult question. Bobby Orr will join us sometime after 5:30. Brian Hayes is calling in at 6:05.
To the Blue Jays Committee. Correspondent.
Blue Jays correspondent. And Bob Weeks will talk about golf at 6:25. That's all coming up on Overdrive on TSN 1050 on the app and watching on TSN 4.